This is the 250th program in the series London Forum, and it's being very fitly celebrated by the presence here in the studio of two of the most distinguished living Englishmen, Lord Samuel, whose wisdom and long experience as an elder statesman is, I think, only rivaled by Winston Churchill, and Bertrand Russell, leading philosopher and historian of philosophy, who has somehow or other managed to make a worldwide reputation as a philosopher in spite of the fact that cheerfulness keeps on breaking in. But this year brings an even more notable anniversary, and it's the 500th birthday, hereabouts, of Leonardo da Vinci, who most of us think of as a superb painter, which he certainly was. As a matter of fact, he didn't paint a very large number of pictures. He was too busy doing other things. He was a sculptor as well as a painter and an architect. And he had a passion for truth and knowledge as great as his passion for beauty. He studied all sorts of science, anatomy and physiology and geology and botany. He may almost be said to have majored in mathematics and physics. And he was something of a technologist, even, which was very remarkable at that time. He thought of steam as a possible motive power. He studied the dynamics of flight. And he very nearly anticipated Harvey's discovery of the circulation of the blood. And one naturally thinks he must have lived in a very wonderful time to give such a remarkable scope for such versatility of genius. And it does look as if the rebirth of Greek culture had brought a rebirth of freedom. The painters, like Leonardo, were free to study nature instead of following formal rules. The scientists and philosophers were free to think more or less as they liked, free from the logic of the schoolmen and to some extent free from the control of the church. Industry was getting free from the guild system. And the ordinary individual was shaking himself free from the rigid framework of the feudal system. Bliss was it in that age to be alive? Or was it? Was it? What do you think, Russell?
Well, I think it depends who you were. It was a very nice age for people like Leonardo. It was a very nice age for princes, provided they didn't get murdered or poisoned, which often did happen to them. It was a very nice age for adventurous people who had a certain amount of talent. For them, I do think there was more opportunity of really tasting life to the full than there is for most people now. But that, of course, didn't apply to the great majority. I wouldn't have been a peasant in that day. Still less would I have been a peasant's wife. I think their lives were hard and drab and dreary to the last degree. So it really depended upon who you were, and whether you ought to think that age better or worse than this. It depends upon whether you judge an age by the highlights or by the average. Now, if I could take an analogy, consider ants and nightingales and contrast them. Now, nightingales sing delightfully, and you all like to listen to them. They don't, as far as I know, do any useful work. I've never heard of any useful work done by a nightingale. Nor, I think, do nightingales think very much about their duty to the species. Ants, on the other hand, ants, as we know, labor all day long. Every ant is completely and absolutely virtuous, in the sense of being completely devoted to the community. I've never heard of an ant deviating from virtue by a hair's breadth. They never have individual impulses. They never think, I think I'll stop carrying this straw and paint a picture. They never think such a thing. Now, the ants, of course, they do succeed. There are more ants in half an acre than there are people in the whole world. In that sense, the ants succeed. At the same time, I think most of us prefer the nightingales. So that it's rather a question which way you're to judge an age.
Would you accept that dilemma, Sam?
I don't quite know what Russell means to imply by that. The question before us is whether Leonardo's age compared with ours is better or worse. Does he mean us to think that the Renaissance was the age of nightingales and the present day the age of ants?
The Renaissance was an age when there were a few nightingales. Ours is tending to become one in which there can't be any because the ant has got the upper hand.
The ant has the upper hand in our age.
That's what I think.
The ant would be a proper symbol for this age and the nightingale for the Renaissance.
Certainly the ant would be a proper symbol for what this age is becoming.
Well, I quite agree with what you've been saying, that you mustn't judge, compare one age with another according to the selection of the highlights. Leonardo was an astounding man, probably unique in the history of mankind for many-sidedness and greatness in many directions. But it doesn't follow that because we have no one in this age than Leonardo, that therefore the age in which Leonardo lived was a better age than this. You must take the age, good and bad, from top to bottom as it is if you're going to compare them. And you mustn't compare only one great artist with the mass of ordinary people. As to the ants and the nightingales, well, I don't in the least agree that our age is less individualistic in the sense of giving scope for individuals and producing splendid individuals in great numbers. We've passed through, in our time, the ordeal of two great wars. Do you regard the young airman who won the Battle of Britain and who saved the liberties of the world, do you regard them as comparable to the ant? Or those who went to the sea in submarines and the into battle in the engine rooms of battleships, are they ants?
Well,
let me finish a few more. The pioneers of science, for example, who have in this age made the most amazing discoveries, for example, in medicine and sanitation, saving the lives of all of us and eliminating many diseases from the list of the troubles of mankind. Or those other pioneers of thought who have revealed to us the universe up from the depths of the atom and down from the height of the stars. And who are you, above all, to talk about this as an age of ants? Are you of the ant type? Or are you a great and original thinker? Those are points. Or are you one lonely nightingale by some freak of nature hatched out of an ant's egg?
I think he's rather got you there, Russell, hasn't he?
I don't agree with this for a moment. Now, of course, when you spoke about the airmen, well, nobody's going to say a word against the airmen or a word in disparagement, because obviously we owe everything to them and we admire them enormously. At the same time, I should like to point out that no human being who ever lived has more courage in battle than the ants have. The ants have tremendous battles, and they all are willing to die in the pursuit of those battles. Not one of them flinches ever. And so I think every ant is as brave as the bravest human being. Now, when you say, do I consider myself an ant? Well, I don't know about myself. I can't.
A flying ant, perhaps.
Yes. No, I wouldn't say that. Let's talk about me. It's hardly fair. But I do think that there's a tendency in the world. I said I thought it was what the world is becoming. And I find that the people I know who seem to me to be individualistic are mostly old. I don't see quite so much of it in younger people.
Well, they haven't had the same opportunity to display themselves.
That's exactly what I said.
As the ancient ones. But it doesn't follow that they won't be, in their turn, quite as brilliant and able and original as those who've gone before. Personally, I don't agree in the slightest degree with your description of this as an age which is becoming ant-like. On the contrary, people are very conscious of the danger of everything becoming mechanized and mass produced. You remember, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. To which Lois Dickinson replied, consider the ant and beware of her. She is there for a warning.
Well, exactly, but that's just what I'm saying. She is there for a warning, and it's a very necessary warning. Now, I find that, while it's true that in England, because England always lags behind in everything, we have some respect for individual liberty, but I don't find that in other countries. Now, I've discussed this matter with American psychiatrists who were in charge of mental cases, and they said that they regarded everybody as a mental case if he didn't quite easily fit in with the majority, and that that was proof that he was a mental case, and I think that's what we're coming to.
Could we take just another criterion? Well, what about the morality of the two periods? I mean, we're agreed as to the superior culture, I think, on the whole, of the Leonardo period. We weren't very strong in morals. Do you think that was due to what the schoolboy called Roosevelt's fourth freedom, freedom from religion? Would you agree with that, Samuel?
The age of the Renaissance was supreme in art, but certainly not in morals and religion. And
are we better, do you think?
I think much better, yes. Undoubtedly, the people had a certain degree of freedom, as was said just now, and there was an easy toleration of individual actions, but it's very easy to be tolerant of other people's principles if you have none of your own. And I think that that was probably the basis of the toleration of the people, many of the people of the Renaissance, in politics, for example. In politics, Italy was a scene of intrigue and force and fraud. Machiavelli is regarded as the typical Italian statesman. There have been attempts in recent years to rehabilitate his name, which had been a byword, but I don't think that those attempts are justifiable. His intellectual brilliance is undoubted, but he was essentially non-moral, and when people say, some people say at all events he was a realist, realism is one word and wickedness is another name for much the same thing. It's said that he was a man of the world, but it has also been said that the man of the world is often the world's worst enemy. Taken in general, I think that in public life and in private life, from the moral standard, certainly in the Western countries and no doubt also in many others, this age is far above that of the Renaissance.
Well, may I disagree totally and absolutely and entirely with every word? I don't think the present age is more moral. I don't think that morality in the form of intolerance is a good thing, which I think was implied in what you said.
No.
I'm sure you didn't mean to say
I
so.
I certainly didn't.
But you said
did
it
say.
Was very easy to be tolerant if you have no principles.
Yes.
And it was implied that it's very hard to be tolerant if you have principles. At least I thought it was.
It's
implied.
Harder. Yes.
And I think, as a matter of fact, that it is very hard. Now, I think tolerance is one of the greatest of all virtues. But as for Machiavelli, when Machiavelli said what subsequent ages have done, and if you take the crimes that have been committed, I'm not saying by our own country, but by certain countries, which I won't name, in quite recent years, they've been worse than anything that Machiavelli ever thought of. He never dreamt of such crimes. Their magnitude, at any rate, surpasses anything he ever thought of. And I think the only point in which we differ from Machiavelli is hypocrisy. No other whatever. We're not morally better. And I don't think that the people of our age are morally better than the people of that age. They're only less honest. And that's all, I think. They commit just as many crimes.
I quite agree that now that there have been these great crimes, but I deny that they are typical of our age, as the principles of Machiavelli were typical of the age in which he lived. The fact that you call them crimes, so that they're evil things, and you don't deny, therefore, that Machiavelli was philosophically a criminal. To say that Hitler and Mussolini were also criminals doesn't show that our age, taken as a whole, the general standards of morality are not better. On the other hand, comparing Hitler and Mussolini with Machiavelli, on the other hand, we have the creation of the United Nations, where almost all the nations of the world, hampered by a small minority, have banded themselves together to uphold standards of righteousness.
May I interrupt you at this point? I think that, in the first place, I call Machiavelli's views evil, but Hitler was a contemporary of ours. Hitler wrote Mein Kampf. Hitler didn't call things evil, which were quite as bad as anything that Machiavelli advocated. And you say that the world has banded itself together to carry out the principles of the United Nations. A part of the world has, and is trying to carry them out by means of absolutely overwhelming armaments, which is the only way in which it can be done, apparently. And another part of the world wants to do just the opposite. I cannot see how you can say that this age is better. And as for the age of Machiavelli, Machiavelli represents Italy, which was one country, and his views were not universal.
May I put in one sentence here? What happened to Hitler? What happened to Hitler was that the world, all the better elements of mankind, banded themselves together, as I say, and overthrew him. And what was his end? If Hitler had won, then I agree that your case might be established.
May I speak at this point? I must add
yes,
this.
Yes, you may take that, certainly.
Well, because what happened to Machiavelli himself had the good luck to die quietly. But Italy was overthrown. It was overthrown by champions of morality who re-established the Inquisition, who burnt the best people at the stake, and who put an end completely to the sort of outlook that Machiavelli stood for. And they were moralists.
Yes, well, that shows the superiority of our age, because there Machiavelli, in the end, his principles triumph, while our Hitlers were overthrown.
Well, now, that's a healthy point of difference between you. Now, take another. Here, Leonardo was born very much of an ant, not born in high station at all, illegitimate son of a merchant, and yet he emerged as a nightingale. Now, what chance would he have had, do you think, in this age, if you can imagine anyone with the same versatile genius, of emerging? Would he have had as good or less good chance? What do you say, Samuel?
I don't think it's possible to say. The fact is that he was lived in an age of in an environment in which art was regarded with enthusiasm by the masses of the people, and a great artist was thereby a great man, and anyone who had the capacity in him to become great in art had the stimulus from the people around him. But remember that the whole of this was only a very transient phenomenon. It all disappeared within a century or so. And why was that? Chiefly because their failure to construct a sound political system based upon morality. They were all split up into warring states. Leonardo himself, professionally, was employed as a military engineer, in which he was most distinguished. Why were military engineers needed? Because all the little states were fighting against one another. Because and that brought about the end of the Renaissance very quickly.
Did you think he would have emerged in this time? You don't.
Oh, yes. I think he would have emerged. Undoubtedly. Leonardo was a first-rate man of science, absolutely first-rate. And he would indubitably now be at the head of American atomic research. Whatever country he'd been born in, that would have been his present position. And he would have had a tremendous position, been universally admired and loved, just as much now as in his own age. Only what he would have been doing would have been slightly different.
But do you think he'd have been employed almost entirely as a scientist?
Entirely.
Do you think it's more difficult to be as versatile as that now, to be a great scientist and to paint great pictures? Nobody does it, as far as I know.
Well, you can be a prime minister and paint pictures.
Yes,
we know that can be done.
And lay bricks.
So that,
and sometimes drop them.
But do you think, on the whole, it is more difficult? I mean, science is so much larger and that sort of thing. You can't do so many things.
So it's much more difficult, yes. Science is a full-time job now. You can't do it in your odd moments the way Leonardo did.
Well, that does make it rather more difficult to emerge, I suppose, in these days.
I don't think more difficult to emerge, but more difficult to be universal, as he was.
Yes. What would you say of that?
Yes, I should say that is so. So the technique of the various arts and sciences needs so much more attention.
But you might write great poetry and yet be a great scientist at the present time, just as much as you would then, I think.
Mm.
But... on the whole, the feeling I've got from you is that if Leonardo lived today, he really wouldn't have quite such a good time because things were such a great opportunity, rather, because things are much more complex and difficult and more divided up into specialisms.
Yes, and so? He would have to work much harder.
On the other hand, it just occurs to me that a great genius may emerge precisely because... art, there's now a certain reaction in art against elaboration and highly finished technique towards simplicity. Van Gogh, for instance, was utterly a great genius and emerged, although he's recognized tardily in this age, having had no advantage or special opportunities in his youth, and there have been others too.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, I agree that an artist can emerge. What I don't think is likely nowadays is that you will get many great artists, partly because of this very matter that came up a little while ago. The Renaissance was brought to an end by disorder, and I think where individuals are so powerfully developed, as is necessary for the best production of genius, they're almost certain to be politically incompetent and therefore to come to grief. It happened in the great age of Greece and it happened in the Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think political competence goes with that sort of effervescent personality.
But do you would agree, Samuel, we are politically far more competent.
It seems to me so,
on the whole, a better society.
And more secure. More, I think, on the whole, more stable in spite of our wars. And the Italians, as I was saying just now, the whole of this brilliant age was evanescent.
May I put a purely statistical point? The percentage of the population of the 15th century who died in war was, I'm sure, very much less than the percentage during the first half of this century.
I don't know about percentages. It's difficult to tell. Of course, their wars were greatly, to a large extent, sham fights,
yeah,
got up by the mercenaries, who were very careful not to hurt each other too much.
Right.
And therefore, the death rate in battle was not very considerable. But to remember that during our unhappy half century, when we've had these two great wars, if you go back to an earlier period, you find that this country, for example, for 100 years from the fall of Napoleon, 1815, until the outbreak of the Great War in 1914, had no war of any magnitude, unless you call the Crimean War one of the, such a war, so that you had the death rate there in battle, so far as the whole world is concerned. It was extremely low, and there's no reason whatever to suppose that... the next 100 years will necessarily be more like the present half century than it was, than it might be like the previous whole century.
Well, I hope with all my heart that you're right about that. Mm. I haven't the heart to combat what you say because I should so like you to be right.
Mm-hmm. Aren't we just, I mean, they were selfish in a sense, weren't they? As you said, it was like the city-states of Greece. They quarreled with each other and they perished. But we look rather like doing the same on a much larger scale, with much larger units, not just cities, not even just countries, but great areas smashing each other up. Isn't that a worse fate for an individual?
It may be, but I don't know why people will say nowadays, because I won't use the word nowadays, it's a very bad word. It usually has been the same before, are so ready to denigrate their own time. You remember what Shakespeare says, past and to come seems best, things present, worst. And I'm often fond of quoting some lines of Emerson, future or past, no higher secret folds, O friendless present, than thy bosom holds. Friendless present. Mm. The present seldom has many friends among its own people. As I think Meredith said something to that effect, the hour is usually unfair to its own.
May I take you up on that? Yes. It seems to me from what you say that we can never hope to get a greater writer than Emerson. Mm. That's probably what you've just been saying. Because but his present was the present of Emerson. And no greater treasure is to be found, he says, in the future than was to be found in Emerson's time.
Emerson's time?
That's what he says. Really, there can be no greater writer than there was in Emerson's time.
Now, can I ask you both one more brief question? You're talking of the present. Now, what's the present going to look like? If you look back on it from 500 years on, as we're looking back on Leonardo's present, what do you say of that? What will be the features that we should pick out as we've been picking them out in Leonardo's time? What do you think?
I think we should pick out the almost unbelievable and blind and sort of fate-like, as if we were condemned by some cruel fate, inability of the nations to see that the old habits of war won't do with modern weapons, and that we've got to get over these old habits or perish. And I think our blindness about that is the main thing that will strike posterity, if there are any.
But do you think, Samuel, we are seeing that already?
I think undoubtedly we are. And it only needs a change of heart in one nation at the present time, Russia, for our age to proceed quite smoothly, perhaps to another and similar and brilliant Renaissance. As to what the future historian will think of this age compared to the Renaissance, it depends, and we can't foresee what it will be. It depends what their standards of values will be, and what they think most important. If they think what is most important is an age that is amusing or interesting or brilliant or artistic, they may take one view. If they think an age which cares for the welfare of the ordinary people and the peace of mankind and secured through the righteousness of nations, then they may take quite a different view.
Well, I'm glad we're ending on a fairly optimistic note. It's very difficult to sum up. I think there's a feeling that if Leonardo had lived today, you seem rather agreed that what would have interested him was nuclear physics and atom bombs. So I think perhaps he might have taken time off to build a great equestrian statue of Winston Churchill for the exhibition. And as to if we'd lived in Leonardo's age, well, the impression I've got is that Samuel and Russell would have had a whale of a good time among the nightingales, and as for me among the ants, my life would have been nasty, brutish, and short.
That discussion between Bertrand Russell and Lord Samuel came from a BBC studio in London. The chairman was Sir William Hamilton Fyfe.